where the Illinois Constitution says that pension benefits are a contractual obligation. They shall not be diminished.
Exactly right. So what we have tried to do, propose here, are some ways in which the cost of the pension system, which is very important to reduce, some ways by which that cost can be reduced without impairing those benefits. That's one of the goals here, to put some ideas on the table. We talk about how you can reduce costs by doing these lump sum trade-ins, in a sense, which is something that the private sector has done quite a bit, where there's surely you're not just unilaterally reducing benefits, which is the big problem when you have a constitutional guarantee, but offering something else in return to people, which they value, but at the same time, the cost of that is much less than what the reduced benefit would be.
So from an employee's perspective, why would your lump sum payment be preferable to staying in the traditional pension plan?
One thing we have to think about is sort of what are people concerned about? People who are members of the pension system are very concerned about the fact that all their pension assets, all their retirement benefits, are right now within SURES for university employees, and there are a lot of political uncertainty about that. So one of the things they would like to do is to see if they can diversify a little bit away from that so that they reduce that sort of future risk initiated.
And so you're saying it's a good deal for the pension system itself, for SURES, and it's a good deal for the employees.
That is exactly why we are saying that this is a way of trying to do it where both parties, the members as well as the system, both benefits from this.
Your report also discusses or suggests ending the tax exemption for retirement income. And I assume that's not just for state pensioners, but that would apply to anyone who gets retirement income in Illinois. That seems like it would be politically difficult to achieve.
Well, it might be politically difficult. What we're trying to point out is the fact that this is a kind of a loophole in our tax system, that we are willing to tax people who are earning income right now, and we tax them, whereas this is just another kind of income. There's no difference between, from an income point of view, these are both incomes coming into people. And we tax one kind of income, but not another kind of income. So consider, for example, a 70-year-old person who is working hard to meet ends meet, and we're willing to tax that income, whereas you might have a 62-year-old retiree, and you're not going to tax that. What we're pointing out here is that there's an unfairness in this. And this is a loophole which really disproportionate burden is being placed on the younger people.
One of the other things your report says is that you expect that if universities do have to take on some of the pension costs, that it could result in tuition increases, or likely would result in tuition increases. And we've seen the university presidents, I think it was just last week, signed a letter to the state legislators saying that they are willing to take on and to continue.
Sure. And I think what we say is not that universities should not. We actually say universities should take on some of the cost. I think that's the universities need to have a skin in the game, because otherwise you're not really being responsible in terms of what is the true cost of hiring somebody. Universities should take on part of it. What we say is that if you're going to transfer the entire cost to the universities, that is going to have an impact. We need to be aware of that because, you know, we don't expect that the general revenue appropriations are going to go up for universities. They're probably going to go down. The universities will take on these costs. So university revenue source is the tuition. So it is going to have an effect. We don't say that universities should not accept any of the normal cost.
And when you say that if universities take on these costs, they should have more control over the benefits, and what does that look like? Should they be able to negotiate different sets of benefits, create new tiers for new employees in the future?
One would be that, you know, what we're concerned about, of course, is the fact that if you transfer all the costs to the universities, but the right to change the plan still remain with the legislators, now you have the opposite problem. The legislators could change and improve and have no consequence of the cost. So what we're trying to point out is that the best way would be both parties being partly responsible.
Ovijit Ghosh teaches marketing at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. From 2001 to 2007, he was dean of the university's College of Business. Thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
That was State House reporter Brian Mackey. You can find a copy of the professor's pension plan on our website, will.illinois.edu. And you're listening to the Afternoon Magazine at 12:45. I'm Craig Cohen. This is our end of the calendar year fundraising campaign. It's a brief one, just 36 hours to raise $36,000 to support WILL. And to tell us more about it, we're joined by David Teal. Hi, David.
Hi. Great to be here. And we have got 55 pledges in so far today, and that is terrific.
Fantastic.
Fantastic. And it looks like we're at $10,363, if I can read that correctly. And so we're working toward a goal today of 15,000. We're well on the way to that, but would love to get to, let's see. Oh, we want to get to at least 60 calls.
Okay.
So you know, we've got about 15 minutes to get to 60 calls, and we would love to hear from folks right now.
And the number to call to do that is 217-244-9455, or you can go online to willpledge.org to make a contribution of maybe a dollar a week or $10 a month or whatever amount is appropriate for your budget. At certain levels of contribution, we have certain ways of saying thank you.
Yes. Well, one of those is at the $250 level. We have a trip coming up on February 28th, thank you. This is for a taping of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me up in Chicago. And this is a bus tour. You'll go up on a bus with other WILL listeners and our station manager, Bob Culkeen. And you'll get dinner, you'll get a box lunch for the trip up, and you'll get to attend a taping of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, and then you'll hear it a few days later on the air. So we've got just a couple of those ticket packages left. It's a pair of tickets available at the $250 level. They're probably going to be gone by the end of today. So if you want to get on that bus, you know, this is the time. 244-9455, $250 contribution.
We really do have a limited number of seats, as you would have on any bus.
And yes.
We can't have you dangling out the window.
Or, right.
You know, or on the hood. We need you inside in a seat. And so once the seats are gone, that's it.
That is it. Nope.
This is the opportunity for you to take advantage right now and make sure you secure your seats for that taping of Wait, Wait. Again, that's at 217-244-9455 or online at willpledge.org. And David, this is also a member match period.
It is. And we have a member match fund, and it's basically current friends of WILL who have made contributions, or basically they've pooled their money together to make this member match fund. And what's going to happen here? We're on this kind of 36,000 dollars, 36 hours. So what will happen is when you make a pledge, whatever level you give at, they will add $36 to that. So
awesome.
Yeah. So your $50 pledge becomes an $86 pledge. And so it's like I've been handed a note here. It was pointing out that even if you become a sustaining member, which means, you know, you're given, you know, $5 a month or $10 a month, we still get that $36. So in addition.
Excellent. Well, this is your opportunity to ensure the future of the great conversations, in-depth news, thoughtful analysis, everything that you hear on AM 580 every single day of the year. It's here because of individuals, your friends, your neighbors, stepping up and making contributions. Join them now at 217-244-9455 or online at willpledge.org. David, one reason I always like to point out is, that your contribution is so important is that there are some people out there who enjoy these services but are not in a position to be able to contribute. So your dollars ensure that this service is here not just for you but for everybody.
And that's, you know, that's the way I like to think of it. I mean, you're not giving a gift to yourself. You're giving a gift to the community. So you're giving a gift to people who, you know, for whatever reason can't afford to do it on their own. You know, and I think of it, too, as, you know, like the public library. You know, it's something you want to be there, and you want it to be there for everybody. You know, it's like, yeah, it's great for you. You can go in, you know, check out a book or two. But, you know, but the fact is, it's just great to have a place like that where everybody can go and everybody can benefit from it. And that's, I think, what happens here when you make that call at 244-9455.
Or again, online at willpledge.org. We accept Visa, MasterCard, Discover, and American Express. If you'd prefer, we'd be happy to mail you an invoice. You could pay by check. It's easy to do. Takes just a couple of minutes, and you hear your dollars at work all year long. 217-244-9455. David, thanks very much.
Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 13th of December, 2012. It's the birthday of the poet Kenneth Patchen, born Niles, Ohio, 1911, author of more than 40 books of poetry like Before the Brave and Hurrah for Anything, and novels including The Journal of Albion Moonlight. Kenneth Patchen, who said, "Think enough and you won't know anything." It's the birthday of the poet James Wright, Martins Ferry, Ohio, 1927. Went to Kenyon College on the GI Bill after World War II, studied writing formally. First book of poems, The Green Wall, in 1956, and then St. Judas 3 years later. Wright thought that he was finished, that he'd said everything he had to say, and then he met the poet Robert Bly and Bly's wife Carol, and they befriended him and took him with them on their Minnesota farm. James Wright said, "They loved me and they saved my life." It's the birthday of the music critic Lester Bangs, Escondido, California, 1948. Wrote for Rolling Stone, Cream, other magazines. Lester Bang, who wrote, "The ultimate sin of any performer is contempt for the audience." And it's the birthday of Mary Todd, born Lexington, Kentucky, 1818, to a well-off family. She was petite, had sparkling blue eyes, reddish-brown hair, highly educated, interested in politics, moved to Springfield, Illinois to live with her sister, and it was there that she met Abraham Lincoln. They were opposites in many ways, and she was also being courted by Lincoln's political rival, Stephen Douglas, who Mary Todd turned down. She and Lincoln had a stormy on-again, off-again courtship. They broke up and they got back together. In 1842, they married, moved into a boarding house where their first child was born. She suffered from depression, anxiety, paranoia, and migraines. Her time in the White House was not happy. After their son Willie died of typhoid fever, Mary Lincoln was crippled by grief. After her husband's assassination, her health declined. She was nearly destitute for a time, committed to an insane asylum, attempted suicide, and spent her last years at her sister Elizabeth's home in Springfield, rarely coming out of her room. Here's a poem for today by Mary Oliver, entitled Lines Written in the Days of Growing Darkness. Every year we have been witness to it, how the world descends into a rich